population that lies to themselves. Now, I don't want to bash that section because my group, you know, the liberals and progressives, we lie to ourselves. Oh, it's going to get, things are going to get better. You know, there needs to be some kind of sanity that's found in the in between, or maybe beyond either one of those groups. But
yeah, you know, when you get right down to it, I mean, Ben and Jerry's does taste good.
It does
and,
taste
and
good.
And Fritos taste good. You know, when you get the TV on, and you know, that's
well,
a whole other thing.
Well,
we
you and
get
I,
into.
Yeah, you and I have a good friend who, you know, in a matter of 6 months of eating one pint of Ben and Jerry's, and I love Ben and Jerry's in moderation. But remember what happened? He had a heart attack.
Yeah.
This is a young guy, 53 at the time, and he cut out Ben and Jerry's, and he's been healthy ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fat is very bad for your health in general, especially saturated fat.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Too much of it.
Yeah. But, you know, regarding health care, we hear so much about health care reform. And, you know, Obama, in my opinion, got crucified. Just like
Hillary. He made a big mistake there. There's no way he was going to win on health care.
No, he wasn't going to win. It's just any more than Hillary Clinton was going to win. Unfortunately, poor guy can't win on anything with this the crazy, you know, I don't want to, you know, that's the way the Republicans in the House oppose every single thing the guy says and does. But having said that, if we know that we're responsible for our health, if we can start eating better, if we can start moving better, thinking better, things that are within our power, it provides us, you know, some degree of insurance. I would say a high degree of insurance. And we don't have to necessarily, I mean, while we want health care reform to happen, at least we can start it in our own lives. I was mentioning earlier Mitt Romney, you know, presidential candidate leading right now the Republican race, has said that he wants the pharmaceutical industry to run our health care system. Now, that's scary. The pharmaceutical industry.
Why?
Why is it scary? Well, let me tell. Well,
it's going to be a drug.
No, I know. I know you love those. Pop those pills. How many of you popped since we've been on the show?
that reminds me. Hold on.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The pharmaceutical industry makes. They're the second largest, you know, most profitable, you know, corporation in the world, and
it's because of the patents. They're one of the few corporations that really benefit from patents. They have a protected market.
From patents, they get tax exempt status because presumably they're in the healthcare field. Just like medical schools are tax exempt, but the pharmaceutical industry, the profit they make is several times larger than the median for Fortune 500 companies. Yep. They make more money. Profit-wise, and they 2 to 3 times more than they spend on research and development, another several times more than they spend on marketing, and most of their marketing is to the medical schools. Now, this is interesting. They'll go to a medical school, and they'll say, we'll pay for the books, we'll teach you what to teach, we'll educate the doctors, and we'll control the research, and if we don't like it, we'll change it or not let it be published until it, you know, agrees with what we want. They, when you're a medical doctor, you have to get so many hours of CEU credits. You know, I need 12 in the state of California every year. They pay doctors to take, they pay you, just like you're at work, to take those hours, and they're teaching the classes. You know, if I want to take guitar lessons with you, Rick, I'm going to pay you. You're not going to pay me to take guitar lessons. But that's basically what's happening. The medical schools are being paid by the pharmaceutical industries to teach their students. And again, it comes back to the fact that what the medical doctors learn, and they do learn this really well, is that every disease needs a drug. Fuck lifestyle choices.
And so because the pharmaceuticals are paying the colleges are teaching the students what the pharmaceuticals want them to learn. Is that what you're...
Yeah, for example, when Vioxx was proved to be dangerous, it was causing heart attacks, you know, it was a cholesterol-lowering drug, the FDA wanted it off the market. And the drug companies basically came back and you know, paid enough money to the right people, and it got put back. It's since been taken off. Now Celebrex, I think, is the only major one of these COX-2 inhibitors that's still out there. But why not, when someone comes to the doctors, offer education about lifestyle choices? Now, it's not unfortunately, if the average person or the average doctor is visited by a patient for high cholesterol and the doctor says, I want to talk to you about stopping smoking and exercising and, you know, maybe eating differently, the patient's going to say, give me a drug, doc, because they've been brainwashed by all these commercials. We've been brainwashed since day one. And if they don't get the drug, they go someplace else. So I don't want to only bash the medical profession. I don't mind bashing the pharmaceutical industry.
But most of the people want to hear something official and believe in it without even investigating the meaning the instructions behind it.
Yeah. Well, sure. Well,
so they go to a qualified doctor, somebody well known doctor in Santa Cruz, really good doctor, blah blah blah, and they're told to take this medication for their high cholesterol. They're going to listen to the official.
The official
voice.
Who went to a medical school.
Rather than going and having carrot juice every day.
Yeah.
And cutting out meat and half and half and Fritos and all the other stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, Cheetos are good, but remember Ronald Reagan said Cheetos. Ronald Reagan counted Cheetos as vegetable. Remember that? Ketchup and Cheetos, yeah.
Oh, the great Ronald Reagan.
And this kind of goes to the medicine under capitalism doesn't really work because there's no incentive to come up with a cure that'll cure you immediately. They want to come up with a treatment that you'll have to take the rest of your life because they're going to make a whole lot more money on it.
It's sad. Medicine under capitalism is doomed. And here's a classic example. We know, thanks to the way medicine's been practiced for the last 40 years, when an antibiotic was given for everything, antibiotics worked against a bacterial infection, but they were given for everything, including viral infections. They don't have any effect on a virus. Mm-hmm. So now we have these superbugs that are beyond the control of any medicine we know. So rather than putting, well, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite here, but hopefully this will make sense. Rather than the pharmaceutical industries putting money into coming up with medications to help treat these more serious versions of colds we're getting lately because of superbugs, since there's not a lot of money in that, they're after the new Viagra. They're after the new Celebrex. They're after the new drug that is going to make a bunch of money. So in other words, is the incentive to help the public?
Because as long as there's money involved, and a lot of money, there's no incentive to help the public.
Yeah.
It's only like in this country or Europe in the first world. In the third world, they have really serious illness problems that could be cured cheaply, but they don't have the money to pay anything, so none of the pharmaceuticals are looking at it.
Yeah, and the whole thing's just going to take a nosedive down this great big hole before anything really gets resolved. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think anybody's going to step up to the plate and say, we've got to stop all these wars, and we've got to stop feeding the public all these pharmaceuticals, and we've got to stop using the GMOs. As long as there's money to be made, that none of that's going to change. You know, now call me a pessimist. I don't have much hope that things are going to get better unless there's some kind of revolution or revolt.
I wouldn't call you a pessimist. I'd call you someone who's willing to not lie to yourself, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's what I believe anyway,
yeah.
Personally.
Yeah,
You want to take a break?
Yeah, we can take a break.
Yeah.
Time for our medicine, right?
Wait, what are you on? You're on Coumadin, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I told you before, you're on my dough. Don't give me that brother. The freaks on the phone won't leave me alone. So don't give me that brother. What you can do. There ain't no Jesus going
Okay, and that was John Lennon, I found out from his first solo.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, I should say the stream of Free Radio, I don't think we're on the air at the moment. We're in the process of hooking up our antenna. So if you're trying to listen to us on the radio, you aren't hearing us. But if you're on the computer, hello. This is Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides coming up, the July 17th, 2014 show. So stay tuned and, hey, maybe we'll talk with each other and you can talk to the community.
The question, who owns a land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns a land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land?
Welcome to your home away from home, at least on the computer today. Free Radio Santa Cruz and the 6 to 8 p.m. Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show. Call-in number here in case you want to be a part of the show is 831-427-3772. Again, 427-3772. So jump on the phone if you have one And get in touch if you have any breaking news or you have some reaction to something you're hearing on the air or some news about homeless civil rights struggles in Santa Cruz that we haven't heard about, because I'm interested. So I'm going to begin the show with some interviews. Played a few of them in the last couple of shows, but I've been kind of, I think, skimping on them or running out of time, so I want to be able to get into them today. I am also going to be playing, assuming I can pull it up on my computer, which you can hear dinging in the background, the Santa Cruz City Council's Tuesday session of a week ago, actually 9 days ago. For a week after that session, the City Council had no audio or video available, and that's one of the reasons where I generally insist on, if I'm going to council, making my own audio recording of the council, because I have a show 2 days later, the Thursday after the Tuesday, and I often want to make comments on particular parts of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting. Of course, that was prohibited by Mayor Robinson and her goon squad designee, Sergeant Bush, or is it Lieutenant Bush? One of the two. He's a Bush anyway, John Bush. An armed officer who took away not one, not two, not three, but four of my recording devices, rather primitive. A tape recorder is what I still use. But he reserved for himself the right to cut short media coverage, my media coverage, of that City Council session in violation of both the law, the Public Meetings Act, and I think of the Constitution, both of California and of the United States, which is the right to freedom of the citizenry to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's First Amendment right, along with freedom of speech, press, assembly, religion, and the right to be free from an establishment of religion. So I couldn't do it, but now, finally, a week later, they were finally able to get their own recording. Again, a recording where they can choose when to stop the recording and when to start, they being the mayor through the community TV system. And I'm not aware that they engaged in any cuts. But then I wasn't there for the entire meeting. I sat part of the meeting on the floor next to my tape recorder because of the rule of the mayor that there be an attended tape recorder. In other words, you have to be next to it. And I customarily place my tape recorder in a spot on the banister between the speaker's podium and the city clerk where it can pick up both the speaker and the city council without the rustle, hustle, crinkle, and crackle of the audience. And on all four occasions when I set it up, the minute that I walked away, it was taken by the police officer. And when I asked him if I could be returned to me, he said, no, not until you leave the meeting. So I didn't get an opportunity to record, but you'll finally be able to hear at least the City Council's official version of some of what happened at that council session during the 5 o'clock oral communications session. And we're going to be going to that shortly. But first, here's some street interviews to send us on our way. Actually, I think what I'm going to do before the street interviews is roll with a little music to soften the blow. Add a little sweetness to the sourness. Play for time, whatever, in any case. We'll shortly be going to street interviews and thence to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of 9 days ago. I guess that would be the 8th, something like that. In the meantime, enjoy this.
We are living in the Great Big Dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground.
That was this number by Pat Humphreys, Swimming to the Other Side, from Sowing the Seeds, the 10th anniversary, kind of a get-together of a bunch of old folk singers, Annie DeFranco, Donovan, Pete Seeger, Bruce Springsteen, and others, Judy Collins, Tom Paxton, Peggy Seeger, etc. Be playing a few more of those in the course of the show. Now I'm going to turn, in spite of what I just said right before the song, and perhaps, you know, emphasizing what I was saying, I was going to play some interviews, street interviews first. What I'm going to do, though, is go directly to the oral communications period of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday before last, which I, again, believe was July 8th, actually. That would be 9 days ago. And there was a protest kind of mounting outside right before oral communications. Huff had set up what we call our Cafe Huff, where we were serving coffee. Thank you, Joe Schultz and Pat Colby, for your help in providing that, as well as pastries. Tip of the hat to Pat Colby, who's been putting in overtime as a baker extraordinaire. And we also were encouraging people to come and talk about the need to pass, a recommendation of the local American Civil Liberties Union, which I've discussed in the last few shows, which called for a moratorium on sleeping and camping bans at night, given the shelter shortage, given the public safety situation of homeless people who can't sleep in well-lighted areas, they can't sleep in areas where they can use the police if there's a problem. They can't sleep in groups where there's more safety, because all sleep after 11 o'clock at night is a crime, according to the Santa Cruz City Code 6.36010A, the municipal code. And while there are some exceptions that allow for tickets to be dismissed, if you're on certain waiting lists, that of the River Street Shelter and the Paul Lee Loft, it's difficult to get any kind of documentation that you're on these lists. And police will often harass you anyway and give you citations and move you on, wake you up at midnight. And it's a real problem. It's a basic human rights violation and a form of torture, actually. It's an attempt to make Santa Cruz an unwelcoming place to those the city has decided it doesn't want within its boundaries, in violation of the constitutional right to travel, right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, right to substantive due process. Number of rights are violated, and it's just obviously basic human decency is violated here, as well as costing the taxpayers and the city money by sending out the police to do this if there's no problem. And unfortunately, that's what's happening every night. Certainly not to every sleeper. Certainly not. The jails would be packed if that were the case. But everyone has to face that fear and that concern. We have a caller. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Cynthia calling in with Tenants Together.
Hey, Cynthia. Tenants Together. Welcome to Free Radio.
I don't have a very good connection, so I won't talk too long. But
can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, you're good. Tell us something about Tenants Together. This is the first time we've had anyone talk about it on the air.
Well, Tenants Together is a statewide tenants' rights organization, and they've been really active since about 2008. They were started in L.A. just by a local neighborhood guy many years ago, maybe 30 years ago. And it's a nonprofit organization. And most of their headquarters people are in San Francisco now, and they've been working a lot with tenant victims of foreclosure. So I contacted them, and I'm working with their main organizer in San Francisco, and I'm setting meetings in Santa Cruz, Live Oak, and Watsonville for tenant education.
So are these meetings, should we be letting the public know about this? When are they?
These aren't public meetings. These are meetings that we let people know about them that are tenants.
Ah.
They're not like open to landlords and everything. So we're kind of not exactly public. They're kind of by invitation only, and people will hear about them through their neighbors, hopefully, and through some we'll do some leafleting and tabling, letting people know. We try to get people to sign up with us so that we can email them directly.
I guess Tenants Together has a website, right?
They have a great website, and it's getting better all the time. So it's just tenantstogether.org, and they have a page that has all the latest. They're really good in keeping up with all the latest news about pro-tenant rules and laws that get passed around the Bay Area, but also the whole United States. They have a really great news aggregator woman who works out of Sacramento named Allison. I forget her last name, but she's great. And they have a lot of, you can go on to the website and post your own story. They have an area for that. And I encourage anyone to join them, you know, become a member. I think you can just sign up for free, but it's always good to support them as well. Yeah.
Well, are you? Is there a place where tenants can get in touch with you either by email or through the website or through a phone link if they have concerns that they want to bring to you and the local, you know, organization.
Yes, there sure are. There's a website. You can email me at santacruztenants@gmail.com, santacruztenants@gmail.com, and you can leave me a message. Just a minute, I got to look up my number. You can leave a message for me at 831-222-0359 if you have a question or want to know more about this together. Also, I speak fluent Spanish, so people can, you know, tell their Spanish-speaking neighbors that they can all tent together.
So, Cynthia, you have been in and around Santa Cruz for decades, though I guess not so much recently. As a tenant, you've had a lot of experience here.
Well, I have not really had that much experience because I've had good luck and I've lived places for a long time. So compared to someone who's had to move around a lot, you know, I've been lucky. But, yeah, I've always rented. I've never been a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly in this area.
Well, you know, I remember in the 90s there was a group that Donna Dice worked with called the Tenants' Rights Union, where she would almost single-handedly, with her partner, try to help people who are fighting evictions and so forth. Do you anticipate that perhaps tenants together might be helping people fight inappropriate, unlawful, or unfair evictions?
Well, Tenants Together has a hotline number, which I will give out. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't, I'm not able to help people with legal issues because my knowledge of the law is limited, and tenant-landlord law is extremely complex. However, I can help people with their basic rights, but let me give you the hotline number for Tenants Together. They should call you back, but they say that they'll call you back within a week. So they're staffed by volunteers. They have trained volunteers that take the calls, and then they have lawyers as well who, if there's something that sounds like it's a legal issue, they'll pass it on to their lawyers. So the hotline is 888-495- 8020. That's 888-495-8020. And that is the tenant's hotline. And as far as the foreclosure issues go, you tell them that they have a special, specially trained people who have had a lot of experience helping tenants and should know all the latest updates on foreclosure laws as regards tenants, which, you know, has been kind of evolving since all this housing crisis started escalating and with the economic downturn.
You know, the last time I had a conversation with someone about, you know, tenant problems here in Santa Cruz was with the Project Connect. One day a year, rah, rah, rah for the homeless, the rest of the time, fuck off. When I talked to someone with California Rural Legal Assistance, which used to provide, and I guess still tries to provide, some kind of legal assistance for tenants. But when I talked to a woman who'd been there for decades and worked hard on the issue, though she was long-suffering and seemed very sympathetic, she was also realistic in her assertion that in Santa Cruz, it's really hard to beat evictions and also... My experience has been it's really hard to find legal assistance. I don't know how long you've been, you know, recently researching Santa Cruz, but you may find this a hard nut to crack.
The reason I chose to come do this in Santa Cruz because I originally wanted to do it in San Jose, but I happened to be here when I contacted them, and their lead organizer just he asked me where I live, and I said Santa Cruz. He said, "Well, why don't you start there?" And I realized, you know, Santa Cruz is probably it's one of the top three places in the Bay Area that needs it. I mean, and so that's why I'm doing it. It's never happened here. It's never happened correctly. I'm not going to be somebody who goes and helps every single person. I'm going to be somebody that organizes people to work on their own behalf in a group. And the way that needs to happen in Santa Cruz is these supervisors and city council people all over the county, they need to be shamed because they are not addressing this, and they have never addressed this issue, and it's gotten extreme, and they're very aware of it, because in Santa Cruz, over 55% of the residents here are renters. But homeowners are the ones that get the special attention because they're the ones that pay for city council people's campaigns much more. Also, UCSD students, they don't vote anymore, and I am going to be having a campaign to educate the students about how their renting habits affect other people in the area, and how if they would organize and join with all tenants, then maybe they wouldn't have to be paying such, just handing over their financial aid or parents' money without as much as a peep. I think there needs to be, they have a large group and they can have some power. Mm-hmm. Is the point. So I'm looking at, you know, it from not going to be able to help every single person with their individual issue, but I can give them basic information and a contact number to a hotline and help, you know, I can help tell them how to go through the procedure to pursue a landlord in small claims court if it comes to that. Like a lot of times the main thing issue people have is they don't get their security deposit back either on time or in the amount that it should be. So, yeah, I'm looking at, we need to organize the people and we need to be attending. I've already taken tenants to the Housing Authority Commission meeting once, and they don't meet this month, but we'll be going to the commission in August if they meet. And there's also a Housing Advisory Commission that's part of the County of Santa Cruz. I'm going to take people there, tenants, to observe the workings of people who deal with money, who come into this county, money that is for housing, whether it be affordable or not.
Yeah, I know that if you talk to pseudo-socialist former council member and six-time, maybe five-time mayor Mike Rotkin, he will tell you the last time he attempted any kind of rent control legislation was in 1982. He insists there's a much, at that time, there was a much smaller proportion of renters to landlords in the city, or people who own their own property anyway, 52%. And he said, you know, it's a useless fight, and very rarely will you find people running for city council on even renter protection concerns. I mean, San Jose has very weak renter protections, but I think they have stronger renter protections than Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah, Santa Cruz has never had anything good for renters. It's always been terrible for renters, really. I mean, as soon as the prices went up, which was in the 70s. So the only way Mike Rotkin or anyone can get anything done is by organizing renters. If he didn't want to do that work, I can understand that he had other jobs. But I want to be an organizer, and I want to meet other people who want to organize people who understand the importance of organizing the tenants in this county. Watsonville is much worse than Santa Cruz and has much more problems. You know, you think it's bad here, but the unemployment there is much higher and the poverty level is higher. So there's a lot more advantage taken of renters in Watsonville than even in Santa Cruz.
Though, ironically, as I understand it, rents are cheaper in Watsonville than here. A lot of people commute from Watsonville.
They're not that much cheaper, and the housing a lot of times is much more crowded and not in an older. But mm-hmm. when they commute to Santa Cruz with the price of gas at $4.20 a gallon, they're not really saving any money.
No, I hear you.
I've already spoken to some people who were kicked out of a place and moved to Watsonville, and then they were complaining about how much it costs them now and time and money to drive to Santa Cruz to their old job.
And you're coming from, you were living previously in another city. Was there successful tenants together working in that city? Have you had much experience with this group working successfully with tenants? I know East Palo Alto is mentioned as a success story on the Tenants Together website. I was reading about it before the show. They're going after a corrupt city manager, as I remember.
Yes, and that's great. They do things like, you know, they did a Public Records Act request and got the goods on somebody there. And I lived in Palo Alto, which is atrocious towards tenants. They just voted down like some kind of affordable housing for seniors. They're really bad. I mean, come on, Palo Alto, they've got so much money. And they think they're kind of like about exactly the same size as Santa Cruz. And, but they have a real similar kind of a situation where, I've got mine, screw you, kind of a attitude, of the homeowners. But, another really great, success story, it's ongoing, but I attended a, Tenants Together tenant meeting in Concord. It was at a community center, and, it wasn't just open to the public. It was people who had already been attending for a while, and then some new people who had contacted them either through the website or phone calls and been referred to that meeting. So what happened in Concord was I don't know how it was initiated, but I think someone contacted Tenants Together and told them that there was a bed bug epidemic in a lot of apartment buildings. So their organizer, he's really a great guy. His name is Guillermo Elenes, and he's their paid main organizer. And he went over there, and the tenant, what you do is, you know, you don't do it for people. You just train the tenants, like, how to proceed to have some success. So they started going to the, what happened was, and they would make, when they would file complaints, there would be a lot of finger pointing, like who's responsible. Oh no, not me, it's them. Oh no, not us, it's him. So it was finger pointing between the city council and the police and the building inspector and the environmental health. These are people who are supposed to enforce rules and laws and municipal codes, but nobody was taking responsibility for dealing with the bed bug epidemic. So after attending, you know, en masse, quite a few meetings, they finally sued a landlord for $500,000. At that point, the landlord got involved, and it was like, hey, what am I supposed to do? Because the city didn't have any good outline in their code for how to proceed. And so now they're getting some action by the landlord, and they wrote a new policy. So the city wrote a new policy outlining who's responsible for enforcement.
Are the bed bugs gone?
You make a little step at a time. You don't.
Mm-hmm. Did they get rid of the bed bugs?
Well, bed bugs they're really hard to get rid of. So, but I think that at least they, you know, they're going to have to help the tenants with the expense of trying.
Mm.
What happens is the kids get bit and they're in school and they're distracted and these bites itch and they have like a lot of little red bites. Even they don't have bugs on them at school, but they just have these bites and they're really distracting. And that was what, you know, that was a big thing for the people there.
Yeah, I've heard that happening in the homeless lack of services center, as I call the shelter here. I think it was particularly up at the Armory when the Armory was open in the winter. So we're talking with Cynthia Berger, who is, are you a representative of Tenants Together?
I'm a tenant organizer, and I'm a volunteer, and I'm working with Tenants Together because my mentor is their lead organizer.
And again, you can reach her. Actually, you can reach Tenants Together at the following number. So grab your pencil if you want to write it down, and I'll give you a moment to run to get a pencil, and I'll read it off again. It is 888-495-8020, or you can contact Cynthia by email at santacruztenants@gmail.com. Am I right on that?
Correct.
And there's also a message you can leave for her at 222-0350?
222-0359.
0359, thanks. Okay, we'll get that corrected on here, and hopefully other people are corrected when they're making notes. 222-0359, if you've got questions about how to organize as a tenant. If you want some tips from people who've done it, get in touch with Cynthia. And anything else you want to pass on right now? I'd love to get regular reports from you, Cynthia, because I think this is really an important issue, obviously.
Well, we'll be starting we'll be starting monthly meetings at Loudon Nelson Center, and I'm not sure if we're going to start in August. I'm hoping so. The plan is to have a meeting once a month, a main meeting in Santa Cruz, and eventually maybe we'll have more than once a month, but as we're building, it'll be at Loudon Nelson Center, and I'm going to start with Wednesday evening, 6:30, and I'm going to also try a Saturday morning to see which one gets more people. Some people might not be able to come if they have their kids on Wednesday evening, but there is a nice playground there, so I thought, well, maybe we'll try a Saturday morning. I'm also looking into meeting at the in the Mid-County area. I've got a place that's not confirmed yet, but it's near the end of 17th Avenue where it intersects with East Cliff, Portola. And I'm also looking at a place in downtown Watsonville. So we will be doing them at Loudon Nelson for sure. And I can also do individual meetings like at people's apartment if they just want to have some of their neighbors over. I've been doing that. If they're having an issue and they don't want everybody to know about it, there's a lot of anxiety about this. So they can call and I can just come visit them, or we can meet at a coffee shop and they can tell me what's going on and we can plan a meeting. We've done that before. I'm really looking for fighters, people who are willing to stand up and, not easily intimidated. Everyone else can come too and get some information on how to proceed to protect their rights. I'm looking for help organizing. I'm looking for help tabling. I'm looking for Spanish speakers that can help. Bilingual's fine. Spanish's fine. And I have an idea which I'm working on of having a workshop. It'll be like the grand opening for our Tenants Together meeting. It'll be on a Sunday in October in the afternoon. We'll have a workshop at the beginning, and then the second half we're going to have a panel. We'll be inviting city council candidates to have a Q&A panel along with tenants' rights activists from Tenants Together and Causa Justa, Justa Causa, which is another activist organization in San Francisco, and a local tenants' rights lawyer who just is locating here from San Francisco, and he's won some cases for tenants.
Wow, you actually found a lawyer in Santa Cruz, huh?
Well, I've been in contact with him because, I've known him since he was a little kid because he went to school with my son. Our son, and he was in San Francisco. He was a volunteer for 3 years with Tenants Together, I found out, and he's coming back here. So he was asking me if I knew of any business for him. So if you got a case that you think is really going to go somewhere, then there's a successful tenant lawyer in town. We've had successful cases in the courts in San Francisco and Oakland.
Uh-huh. I know the San Francisco Tenants Union has been a group I've gotten in touch with when I wanted and referred people to, because they've Ted Gullickson and others up there have been fighting that fight for a number of years. Any connections with them?
They are wonderful. And, the tenants union is on the same floor, it's the same building as the tenants together. So they work together hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to roll. Again, I want to remind you, if you want to get a hold of Cynthia Berger of Tenants Together, you can do so by emailing her at santacruztenants@gmail.com or calling her and leaving a message at 222-0359. And Tenants Together's hotline is 888-495-8020. Cynthia, call back, anytime to Thursday evenings or Sunday mornings and give us updates. Feel free to put out announcements and so forth.
Thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate it. And I just want to remind one last time about the wonderful website. It's all full of tenant resources that are really useful and some uplifting stories along with some annoying ones. So that's tenantstogether.org.
Thank you. Sure. Yeah. All righty. We'll do it again.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you are tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM, if we were on the air, which we're not. But on the stream, you just go to freakradio.org and you click on that little red dot. Of course, all you people on the stream probably know that already, or you wouldn't even be listening to us now. So it's a little questionable why I'm even saying that. Let's turn now to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, as I'm calling it, the City Council meeting, of July 8th, where there were a number of people who had come, as I was describing before Cynthia Berger's call, to talk about the ACLU resolution, which the ACLU itself has not yet presented to City Council. As I mentioned at the last show, apparently the old guard of the ACLU is still digging in its heels and insisting this be sent to the regional ACLU before they send it to the local city council. Not that the city council is going to do anything, mind you, but at least the local ACLU would come out on the issue. And that's still pending. I can understand the chair, Peter Gelblum, doing this. I had experience with him before. He's pretty determined in his conservative views and his authoritarian status, but my surprise is that Steve Plaich and the majority on the board that actually passed this resolution would let this happen does concern me. But Plaich's reason or excuse, as I think I would really describe it, is that he wants to have more oomph when he goes to city council by having the regional board support it. Of course, the regional board might ignore it. The regional board might put it on the back burner. I don't think the regional board is going to reject it because ACLUs all over the country have supported ending sleeping bans. But it could obviously be a kind of a double-barreled thing where they come with the local ACLU has passed this resolution and then come back with a second announcement that the regional ACLU also supports it. So what he's really, I think what's really happening here is as a pandering to the internal processes and the conservative forces inside the ACLU, which is too bad and not something that I'm happy with. But there were those activists like Linda LeMaster, who wrote about this issue for the current issue of Street Spirit, who did come to the city council and talked about the resolution. Now, this was back on July 8th, again, as part of the Cafe Huff organizing effort. We went to the gathering of homeless people the night before at the Red Cavalry Episcopal Church. Numerous people signed petitions asking that the city council end the sleeping ban, end the camping ordinance, end the blanket ban, at least during the night, according to the ACLU resolution. And some people spoke about it. And there was a secondary issue for us, which you've heard about on my show repeatedly, which has to do with the right of the public and the media to record the proceedings at a city council. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was forcibly stopped from doing this at this meeting, and I was arrested at a prior meeting on April 1st for doing it. And the phony claim was that I was disrupting a meeting by placing a tape recorder where I always do on the banister between the speaker's podium and the city clerk. So this time what happened was, and you can kind of see it on the video of the city council tape on the city council's the video file on their website. You can see me putting down a tape recorder, and then you can almost immediately afterward, an armed police officer walks over and removes it. He doesn't give it back to me as he did on April 1st. He just confiscates it. And this happens actually four times with four different recorders. And who knows? There is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. It may well happen again. Since we are planning, many of us, to go back to city council to demand action on homeless issues before the city council adjourns for the summer vacation to sun itself in the sun while homeless people have their property confiscated, their sleep disturbed, and their health threatened with abusive conduct by the police department and the city policies against the homeless. What I'm going to do now, though, is I'm going to play the oral communications period, or at least part of it, and I'll be interrupting that by letting you know when and where tape recorders are being confiscated, although you can probably... You can probably see this at least on several instances by looking at the video. If those of you who are obviously if you're listening to this on a computer, you presumably have access to the City Council videos. There's also going to be some postings on the Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, maybe on YouTube and on some Facebook pages, which will, I think, more graphically show this, because the City Council's video, like the City Council's audio, is controlled by the City Council. And not only was it a week late in coming out this time, but you don't get to see all the really that goes on. They choose what they show. But you'll hear most of what goes on. Again, it is people speaking to the City Council and the mayor, directing people to move on. You know, you only get so many minutes to speak. And let's hear some of that now. You'll begin by hearing, I believe it's the voice of the mayor, announcing the oral communications period at 5. She's kind of interrupting the afternoon agenda because she's... City Oral Communications is at a time certain. I call it a doghouse time because in the past years, the oral communication has always been the first item on the City Council agenda. And so not only do people know exactly when it is and are able to come and leave without sitting for the rest of the agenda, but they also they have the benefit of having the entire community that's come to the City Council meetings to hear what they're saying, because people are there for other purposes, so they also hear what is said at oral communications. And I guess this is kind of captive audience stuff in a way, but the oral communications period is the only time that members of the public have an opportunity to speak on items that are not on the City Council agenda. And getting an item on the City Council agenda is sort of like, you know, getting Obama to pull out of Afghanistan. It doesn't happen unless you happen to have friends in high places, or high friends in low places, or something to that effect. In any case, so let's hear some of this, and I'll be, as I said, interrupting briefly to comment on what's actually happening visually. You will not be able to hear the sergeant taking away the tape recorder, but that's exactly what he's doing on 4 separate occasions. And there's some good speeches, too, worth listening to. Let's hear some of this.
With that, we are a minute before 5 o'clock, so what I will do right now is move to our oral communications. And actually, Mercedes, if you have a chance to go up to the podium, it'll be your opportunity to do Spanish translation for us for oral communications and do your announcement.
And at this point, I place a tape recorder on the banister to begin the recording of the oral communications period.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Mercedes.
At this point, the sergeant at arms, an armed police officer, removes it.
Sheldon, and I am an interpreter. I am here to help facilitate anyone who is in need of my services. I am located in the interior of the room on the left-hand side. Pardon me, on the right-hand side. Buenas noches, alcalde. Miembros del concilio. Mi nombre es Mercedes Sheldon y soy intérprete. Estoy aquí para ayudar a las personas que necesiten de mis servicios. Estoy localizada en el interior, al lado derecho del salón. Muchas gracias y buenas noches. Good evening.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here to help serve us. And with that, this is oral communication, and this is an opportunity for people to come speak to us on items that are not on the agenda. So I'd like.
And at this point, I place a second tape recorder on the banister.
I'd like to see how many people intend to speak to us during oral communication. And I want an honest hand.
And at this point, the officer removes the second tape recorder.
And a sense of how many people are not going to just keep popping up, but who's speaking, because that helps me know if we can do. I see hands up, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So right now, if no one else is getting up to speak to oral communications, I could accommodate 3 minutes, and that's what you'll have when you come up to the podium. And there'll be a green light, a yellow light, and a red light, and that allows you to know how much time you have. So.
And at this point, I put a third tape recorder on the banister.
If anyone speak to us on oral communication, or this is your opportunity.
And at this point, the sergeant removes the tape recorder, the third tape recorder.
Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Becky Johnson. Good afternoon, Mayor Robinson and members of Santa Cruz City Council. I, like many of the people who will be speaking today, support a moratorium on the Santa Cruz sleeping ban and the blanket ban, sections of which the ACLU recently passed a resolution calling for a moratorium upon enforcement. This law is unnecessary, it's immoral, it's contributing to the ongoing suffering of people experiencing homelessness. But criminalization of homelessness by this council goes beyond denying people the right to sleep at night or to sit on a public sidewalk. Recently, the council acted to expand the smoking ban to include a ban on the use of vaping devices, which give off zero secondhand smoke. And similar to other nicotine replacement therapies, such as patches, gums, and lozenges, these allow a person who's addicted to step down from their nicotine, and with the goal of eventually eliminating and becoming nicotine-free. Testing of these vapor emittal devices have shown they only have four chemicals, all of which are found in an average cigarette, only at 1/4,500th of the level. So you don't need to call a cop to protect the public health from secondhand vape smoke. Our data at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, indicate that citations for violation of your smoking ban are the number three cited ordinance against homeless people on Pacific Avenue. This is leading to a huge use of resources and officers' time, court time, ultimately jail time. There are people sitting in the Santa Cruz County Jail right today because they were cited under the smoking law. You have said that there will be no cost for this adding the vapes to the smoking, and yet there was cost of signage, cost of officers' time, citing, court time, and ultimately jail time, which is extremely costly. There's no science behind this, but there certainly is bigotry against homeless people, since we know that homeless people disproportionately use nicotine products. 72%, I think, was the figure, versus 18% housed. Please stop this criminalization of homelessness. It makes no sense.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak to us at Oral Communications? This is your opportunity to come to the podium. Well, with people are lined up, I'm asked.
Now, in the middle of Becky's speech, I went and put a fourth tape recorder on the banister about 2 feet away from Becky and the speaker's podium, and then just sat down next to it on the floor with the sign that said something to the effect that, please don't arrest me for tape recording, I'm a reporter. And I sat there as various people were doing some videoing of it, and I'm not sure if that video will actually show up online, but I was attending the tape recorder. So I was sitting next to it, and at which point the officer did not attempt to remove it as long as I sat there.
Asking you to come forward. If no one else is coming forward, this will be the end of oral communication. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hello.
And this is Pat Colby, who's come forward, who gave a very strong indictment of the city's dual standard of dealing with merchants versus homeless people or street performers or political activists on Pacific Avenue regarding signage. Merchants are banned from having freestanding signs on Pacific Avenue. Actually, anyone is banned from having freestanding signs. I think actually non-commercial signs are allowed, but you can't place them on a... they have to move every... Depends on whether they're considered display devices capable of holding tangible things, according to the actual wording of the ordinance. But you can't place them in obstructive positions and so forth. But merchant freestanding signs, which you see all over Pacific Avenue, or at least a dozen of them up and down Pacific Avenue, often they're all day and all night, some of them chained to lampposts and bike racks and so forth, are completely illegal. There is no provision for any kind of permits. And I determined this by, as I've mentioned in past shows, going to the appropriate departments and getting the word that they don't have, you know, and then I got the code section, and the code section specifies there is no permit for doing any of this. So while homeless people are getting hundreds of dollars per citation for not moving every hour or for having a display device larger than 12 square feet, which is three of those 2x2 squares on Pacific Avenue, or being within 14 feet of a building or 14 feet of a bench or 14 feet of a kiosk, and the list goes on, and the 1 or 2% or less of the space allowed for the rest of the community wants to engage in political activity, which includes homeless people, the merchants do whatever they want, and they don't face any consequences. Pat Colby brought up this whole thing with a very graphic visual display, a PowerPoint presentation at the previous council meeting. So what I'm noticing, as you may have heard, I don't know if you, because I've given a kind of a long prologue here, but she was about to close oral communication because Colby didn't get up to the mic fast enough, which makes me wonder if the mayor is getting a little sensitive to Pat Colby's presentation, if the mayor doesn't want to hear what she has to say, or more important, doesn't want the public to hear what she has to say.
City Council members and Mayor, my name is Pat Colby, and I'd like to speak briefly tonight on an issue that I'd like to see some follow-up on by the City Council and the Santa Cruz City staff. In an article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, dated July 5, 2015, they reported on a fire on First Avenue and Marine Parade as a result of illegal fireworks. We all know that fireworks have the potential to cause fires, and that presumably why the City Council imposed hefty fines on citizens and made the city a safety zone this 4th of July. The problem, though, as was outlined in the article, is that this fire burns through power lines, and because of the obvious safety hazard, firefighters were unable to fight the fire until PG&E showed up to cut the power to the down lines. That, according to the article, took an hour. And during that time, another car was destroyed. Now, what would have happened if instead of cars and trees being on fire, the down lines were near more trees in a bushy area or in the redwoods, or there was a wind or there were houses? We could have had a disaster, not because of the 911 response by our first responders, but because of PG&E, who we've helped out by buying them out many times. Didn't seemingly have the proper staffing, PG&E didn't have the proper staffing to adequately address the safety issue in a timely manner. I'd like to see, if not already happening, the city investigate and report to the public why this large and profitable utility company had such an unacceptable long response time on a holiday, and that is likely to require PG&E emergency services. And next year, I'd like to see the City Council and the staff, rather than focus on triple fines on citizens for, like, alcohol and other things, for the city to come up with a plan that will ensure that cars and neighborhoods don't burn down because of emergency personnel are waiting for PG&E to arrive. I'd also like to add, I live in a Section 8 called Mission Gardens Apartments, and it goes crazy with fireworks. It's like a war zone there, and I think that First Alarm should be hired to be there to stop that illegal fireworks that could start a fire in that eucalyptus wood growth, because it's a big disaster waiting to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
And it should also be said regarding this issue that the intensive focus on stopping fireworks on the beach, although it didn't result in any serious fires this year, except perhaps for the one that Pat Colby mentions, at least that I've heard of, does drive people to use fireworks in more fire-sensitive, dangerous areas away from the beach. The beach, you would think, is the safest area because of its, sand and water. But in their obsession with legality and control, I don't know, maybe they're training for military exercises overseas, or there's sort of the thrill of controlling the population, or there's a determination to prove they can do it, or the fact that they've got the expanded police force that they need to use and the money that the city council throws at them to do it. We have this, again, for the first time ever, we had a triple fine zone for 3 full days, which put triple fines for a number of things, including fireworks, not just on the beaches, but citywide. So that was of concern to me, and I think should be concerned to other folks as well.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Honorable City Council members. My name is Elise Casby, and I'm going to speak in very loaded terms with political language that many will find jargonistic. But the reason I'm going to do this is because since I was a professional in the mental health field in approximately 1985, and the Reagan cuts demolished our burgeoning state-funded mental health system, I have been extraordinarily curious about what was happening in my country. So I'm a little nervous speaking in public, but I have just finished 20 years of research in the field. And I'm going to use academic terms such as norms, it's a sociological term, and other political economic terms. Homelessness is necessary to a fascist style of capitalism where there is no bottom. In capitalism that is extremely mean or cruel, where you have no bottom, you're able to get extremely cheap labor around the globe, things like slave labor, prostituting young girls and disappearing them to other countries, and other egregious, absolutely horrendous things that are not well documented in our daily media. So I just want to say that when I was shocked as a young 20-something person just out of college that my caseload of 16 blind and so-called profoundly retarded women were no longer going to be getting pretty much any services other than basically being kept alive, which is something that we had worked for 100 years to attain, I went on a long search, and I'm here to report that the United States of America is completely failing its people. And the targeting of so-called homeless people is so egregious that it is on the order of what Hitler did to the Jews, and I am not exaggerating. This is a well-researched thing that I'm talking about. It's called invisible violence. It is prolific in this culture. Without a strong government to mediate between corporations and high-level capital, we have technically capitalism. So homelessness is important to this form of capitalism because we need to target somebody to blame them for pretty much everything. Okay? While the corporations are going and stealing our government and making the public, putting up smoke screens so that we're not actually participating in government in a fundamental way to make it more representative and to continue our democracy. If this council, as one of the most hopeful cities in the United States that could possibly address homelessness in a fair way, doesn't get its act together and start taking yourselves extremely seriously as people who need to understand homelessness from the ground up, I guarantee all the experts are coming out with this. experts in homelessness, experts in mental health, you will suffer a huge backlash, and it will be very ugly. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next. Good afternoon.
And at this point, I got up with my sign, which again asked people not to arrest the reporter, and of course they haven't, which was good, but I was apprehensive about it because that's exactly what happened on April 1st when I replaced the tape recorder and simply moved to back to sit down in the seat in the audience, distant from the tape recorder, and therefore it was an unattended tape recorder. Members of the public, and that includes the council, I've been, of course, sitting in the front row holding up this sign because, as someone of you may have noticed, the officer has on three occasions taken away a tape recorder that I traditionally use to record council meetings. Last time I was arrested by the mayor for disrupting a public meeting by actually putting it there and then replacing it. Now let me talk about the substance of this. I'm going to go to the bathroom in a moment. I'm expecting my tape recorder will be there when I get back, because this is of media that is attempting to get out information to the public, and some of us sometimes have to do a bathroom break. So let's show a little basic respect for the First Amendment. A week ago, the homeless community won a significant, if symbolic, victory. The local ACLU has for decades refused to take a position opposing the city's 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban law. On Monday, June 30th, a dozen homeless people showed up at the monthly board of directors meeting and demanded justice. Finally, a sluggish and timid board majority had had enough of the dilatory, obstructive tactics of Chair Peter Gelblum and former Mayor Mike Rotkin. They came out for an end to this vagrant's vamoose sleeping ban law. We've watched this council pass law after law, tightening the noose around the necks of homeless people, pandering to inflated and bigoted fears of neighborhood groups, pressing discarded constitutional liberties that impact homeless and housed alike. Hold up a political sign on a median strip? Crime. Talk back to a uniformed bully in the park? Crime. Huddle for shelter under a bridge in the rain? Crime. And, of course, fall asleep after 11, even the most remote location or in your legally parked vehicle, crime. The nightmare war policies of Bush and Obama have led the country to a surveillance state, a shredded constitution, war after war abroad, and escalating poverty at home. And for the homeless, the perpetual war on the poor is brought home every night. It takes an angry, empowered, and determined community to stand up to this kind of creeping, gated community. Aren't we tired of seeing gangs of cops? I saw five yesterday on Pacific Avenue, five squad cars parked in front of Joe's, 15 to 8 in the evening, using fear and force to address petty infractions. The council, even its self-proclaimed liberals, have no stomach for saying no. It's the rest of us who must use our voices, our own intelligence, and our own determination to restore a broader community. Loud voices do make a difference. What the ACLU has proposed, moratorium on the sleeping and camping ordinances, the community should adopt. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
I'm now going to go to the bathroom. Please leave my tape recorder alone.
Good afternoon, or it's early evening now.
Evening. Thank you, Mayor, council members, helpers. I just want to make a single point. It's also about the moratorium as described in the message from the ACLU.
Yeah, this is Linda LeMaster speaking, and at the same time, the fourth tape recorder is being removed by the officer.
First, let me set this aside. You guys might know it. I don't like the sleeping and camping ban the way the city has it. I hate seeing things that seem to contribute more to the criminalization of homelessness. And I know that in the future we're all going to have to work on that. But right now what I want to say is that if y'all embrace this moratorium idea, it could be a step, an opportunity to collaborate with the county and with the littler cities and come up with something that's kind of unified for the county and systematic. I don't support making being a sleep criminal, I think we could at least do what they do in San Diego and, like, not give someone a ticket if they're asleep, not wake someone up if they're asleep, but use the laws that you have for things that are wrong. But that's not where we're at right now. So what I'm asking you to do is consider having a collaborating dialogue to see if there can't be kind of a similar standard with whatever anti-sleeping and anti-camping laws that these municipalities and regions think are necessary to manage the population. I believe there needs to be alternatives, too, but I've made my point. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
And just a comment on Linda's proposal. The danger, of course, is that since the Santa Cruz ordinance is probably the worst in the county compared, Watsonville actually has a similar ordinance. Capitola has another ordinance similar but not identical. And Scotts Valley recently, well, in the last four or five years, passed an ordinance. Also, the county does not have a countywide camping ban. It has camping bans in four limited areas, mostly near the Emmeline Street complex. And there's a procedure for setting up no camping zones, but they do also have ordinances that prohibit or make it give the police the opportunity to harass people who are sleeping in their vehicles by the roadside. They have trespass laws on county property. So I guess that could get worse if the four jurisdictions come together and pass uniformly a hostile law such as Santa Cruz has. Linda, who I've often criticized Linda for essentially trying to reach out to authorities halfway instead of saying end the damn laws, although she kind of did say that at the beginning, she's trying to do the Steve Plaich thing, which is essentially recognize the so-called existing realities and work with them, sort of like, you know, don't cut off all their fingers, just maybe the little finger. Because I know that it's not politically practical to go after in ending the torture generally. I always have that problem with fellow activists who propose measures that are, you know, an attempt to meet bigots halfway. And I've often criticized Steve Plaich for that. He's a city council candidate who does still call into the show with some regularity. And he's also written a lot for Street Spirit, as has Linda LeMaster. You can get the new Street Spirit if you're interested, the homeless paper that homeless people can sell, with recent stories from Santa Cruz. Thanks to Linda and Steve at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, or from me if you see me wandering around town in a car covered with bumper stickers. There are a couple of cars like that, but very few as bumper sticker heavy as my vehicle. Let's hear a little more from the oral communications period at the Santa Cruz City Council of July 8th.
Hi.
Good afternoon. So I'm here to address the downtown ordinances about art vending, which has been a major topic of...
This is Colin Campbell Clyde speaking.
...discussion in these council chambers for more than a year now. And, you know, a lot of you ran on a platform of being tough on crime. And I'd like to see some of that. I'd like to be able to walk on the levee at night and not have to worry about being mugged like I was a few years back. I don't see how placing all this attention on criminalizing art vendors is doing anything about violent crime or the drug trade, or all of these things that I think we all would agree are serious problems in this city. It seems to be more like an example of trying to fix it when there wasn't really that much of a problem in the first place. If people are engaged in First Amendment protected activity of art vending and they're not blocking sidewalk traffic, I don't really see how that's a problem. And the city's policy in this area seems really confused and contradictory to me. Why would the city put up all this money to house artists in the Tannery Arts Center and then create all these obstacles to people being able to sell their art downtown? I also want to object to some of the language that's gone on around this issue. Art vendors are not clutter. People are not street clutter. You know, that's like calling people rubbish or garbage that needs to be taken out and cleaned away. It's Orwellian sort of language. And I think it's interesting that when we first the latest round of discussion around this issue, that we were told by a member of the council that people who had civil liberties concerns were, quote, idiotic, when, we've seen the public backlash about the Great Morgani being run off the avenue, which will forever be associated with this council. And I'm wondering if anybody here has the guts to say the buck stops here and to stand up and apologize, not just to the Great Morgani, but to the city of Santa Cruz for that egregious action. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And Colin Campbell Clyde was referring to Cynthia Matthews, who said civil liberties concerns were ridiculous or idiotic, and council member Pamela Comstock, who referred to street artists, street vendors, and their displays as street clutter. Of course, what Colin isn't saying, and what I think is the reality, is that in a way, these council members are being much more candid than other council members in acknowledging that's what they think people are downtown, who are showing their wares, showing their jewelry, playing music. They are street clutter, and they want to get rid of them. And that has animated the agenda of Cynthia Matthews for two decades. It really has. She may have come out of Planned Parenthood. She may have been supported by progressive organizations in her initial campaigns with the former Santa Cruz Action Network. But if you look at her votes at city council and the stuff that she has supported time after time, you see that she is pretty clearly supportive of a criminalization of homeless people as a sort of a first choice tool in the toolbox. That's what is used. Well, you know, with some nice fluffy cover. Pamela Comstock is even more militant about it, wanting to defund the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or at least set up security gates around it, fences, ID programs, again, with the attempt of making the entire Santa Cruz area less welcoming, if it's welcome at all. It isn't, of course, but providing less of even the semblance of the basic necessities for homeless people. I didn't stop by the Homeless Lack of Services Center on my way here, but I have in the studio with me a man who actually sleeps at night in the Pauley loft. Are you getting that security gate and fence up so that you can be protected, or the community can be protected from you, Michael O'Grady? What's the story?
No, I see no signs of any kind of construction to do with a gate or identification cards. So don't they have a time period to get that
they
started?
They had 90 days from about 2 months ago, I believe.
Yeah. So, unless
so they're starting to run out of time here, so maybe you'll see more action. I know you were also going to pick up a form for the to determine if document the fact you're on the waiting list. Actually, you're in the Pauley loft because we're trying to make sure that the Homeless Lack of Services Center gives out forms to people who don't actually get into the loft but have applied for it, because that supposedly immunizes them at least from the disposition of camping tickets and perhaps even from the writing of them. Any luck on that?
No luck on that yet. Not as yet.
You haven't tried to do it, though, right?
No, I have not tried to do it yet.
Get in there and do it. That's my go to it.
I'll give you a report on that soon.
Thank you. Let's hear a little more of the city council, but I think we may have kind of passed the main oral communication period here, but let's see if anybody else is actually involved.
Good evening.
Hello, I'm Pat Kittle from Santa Cruz. I'd like to recite a couple of quotes, a couple of favorite quotes of mine. One is by Noam Chomsky. If we don't believe in freedom of expression for those we despise, we don't believe in it at all. The other quote is by Voltaire. If you want to know who rules over you, simply find out who you cannot criticize. Pretty good, huh? Well, I think probably number one on the list of things that we're not supposed to criticize, I'll get right to the point, is the Israel lobby. The Israel lobby pretty much buys our politicians. I think most of you understand that, although you couldn't acknowledge it publicly. The Republican candidates for 2016 all went to Sheldon Adelson's hotel suite in the hotel at the casino he owns in Las Vegas to basically present their resumes for the job of being president at the behest and whim of Sheldon Adelson, who's a multi-billionaire casino magnate from the Israel lobby. Oh, the Democrats have their sugar daddy billionaires from the Israel lobby, too. Michael Bloomberg from New York, George Soros. I'm not sure just where somebody like, who's the kid from Facebook, Zuckerberg. I don't know what his politics are exactly. But anyway, these people are all multi-billionaires from the Israel lobby, and they all, for among other things, get us entangled in Mideastern wars through an awful lot of deceit, I might add. And we really need to start talking about that, because they also interfere in our domestic policy in a very disingenuous fashion, to put it gently. I would highly recommend you go to just Google these search words. Israel did 9/11. All right? Now, you'll go to some websites there that will be slandered as neo-Nazi or whatever. Actually, the Israel lobby will slander everything that indicates Israel had anything to do with 9/11 as being anti-Semitic, neo-Nazi, hateful, blah, blah, blah. And they'll do their best to try and censor it. But we really need to start talking about this, folks. I don't care what your politics are. I challenge you, if you have computer access, internet access, simply Google Israel did 9/11. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. We have a few more minutes for oral communication.
And this is Pat Kittle's message, which actually may represent a significant opinion in Santa Cruz in terms of at least the Israeli bombing of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, or at least of the Palestinians. What I note about Pat, who's very outspoken, is the last time he was up at the mic 2 weeks before, I think Lynn Robinson began to shuffle papers and look away. He stopped what he was doing, and he demanded that she pay some attention. And then he demanded, when she finally did pay attention, that the time be restored to him where he was not essentially getting the attention of the council. And I found that refreshing. Much as I may disagree with Pat on some issues such as immigration and homeless civil rights, where he's a big critic of homeless people camping and so forth. Michael, you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, it just brings up some feelings in me. I don't know exactly how it's going with other people, but up to fairly recently, I was pretty neutral with the Israel situation. But with all this bullying and all this stealing of land and all this, this is starting to get to me. And the fact that we're actually supplying arms and we're helping Israel doesn't sit well with me anymore. and they're stealing the land that doesn't belong to them, and they're just bullying those people more and more, and they're getting away with it. And I don't understand how they have such influence over the American White House lobby, how they can get away with all this stuff. I mean, surely Obama knows when he sees a bully and when he sees people stealing land belong to other people.
You know, this is a topic that is covered by other shows more thoroughly, and I want to be fair to anybody listening who might agree or disagree with this. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it. I tend to agree with you, but, you know, a lot of people are being made homeless over there as a consequence of all this bombing. And, of course, the response to the other side would be, well, Hamas is throwing rockets into Israel. This is simply a response. But, of course, it's very disproportionate. One Israeli is dead next to 200 Palestinians, according to the count I heard this morning. So it's, you know, it's... genocidal might be a strong word here, but might not. I don't know. Let's hear some more from the July 8th City Council oral communications.
So I want to make sure everyone gets their chance. So these will be our last three speakers. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Nathaniel Kennedy, 25-year resident of Santa Cruz, and I have some stuff that I need to say. First off, sidewalk chalk is not a crime. Right now, if you use sidewalk chalk on the sidewalk, you're subject to a nasty vandalism ticket known as 9.20.010MC. This law is in place for a reason, but it's misguided. We need a distinction in the law of the strong difference between spray paint, very difficult to remove, and chalk, which will dissolve on its own. There has been recent talk at the City Council of clearly marking usable areas in downtown for musicians, artists, street vendors, which I strongly support. This is a perfect opportunity to get some areas clearly marked as being, quote-unquote, okay for chalk use, so we can let artists sit and freely do their chalk art on the sidewalk without being labeled a Crayola criminal. I'm not sure if it's Don Lane or whoever else, Mike Posner, who might be the most appropriate to talk about this with outside of the meeting, but I am very interested in helping figure out and putting the lines and markings on the sidewalk for when we want to do that, as has been discussed thoroughly in past City Council meetings. Moving on. Dogs on Pacific Avenue. After 37 years, we have finally legalized having your pooch on Pacific. A major victory, except instead of simply no dogs, the new law is no dogs after dark. So the legalization has only made it halfway. Now we need to fully legalize having your dog on Pacific Ave. Or at the least, we need to change the municipal code signs and update them to reflect to the current laws. Also, we need to place plastic bag dispensers on all of the downtown trash cans. Hopefully we can make an exception to the no plastic bags ordinance here for the use of everyone who walks their dog downtown to clean up after their pooch. We need signs next to the dispenser saying leash and licensing laws strictly enforced. I think the reasoning behind the original no dog ordinance is largely that many dog owners back in the 70s and up till now were irresponsible, leaving their dog's feces behind to the menace of the public and the city needing to clean it up. This is something we still need to address. Many dog owners think ahead and bring disposable bags with them, but not everybody. The smoking ban. What needs to be done about the smoking ban on Pacific Ave and Westcliff is we simply need to lower the fines. Hopefully we can even cut it in half. That, and we really need new signs at eye level so that everybody sees them. We need new signs fully explaining exactly where it is and is not okay to smoke. The no smoking statement on the municipal code signs is simply not enough.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hi, thank you, Council. Thank you, Mayor, for your service. My name is Johnny Font. I'm a West Side homeowner and a small business owner, and I stepped on a needle at Cowles Beach on Father's Day last month. I've had my vaccinations and my blood test and all that. I've gone through that process, but that's not important. What is important is, what are we going to do about this problem and keep it from happening again? I've been swimming at Cowles for over 25 years. My children grew up here, and they've gone through the junior lifeguard program, which I love. I consider the beach to be hallowed ground. To go barefoot in the sand is pretty much a God-given right, as far as I'm concerned. Thousands of children visit our beach every year. You know, they come in from the Dream Inn, come in from everywhere. There's a junior lifeguard program, a vibrant junior lifeguard program going on down there. And, you know, God forbid that one young parent.
And I'm going to kind of hold it there, because I think the main point of my show is to focus on homeless issues, and I've gotten a little far afield here. Nathaniel Kennedy is actually a person who's often on Pacific Avenue, who was first ran into him, I think, when he was making cranes, so little paper cranes, and giving them out, kind of as a social lubricant, you might say. He also was one of the first people who did a lot of chalking on Pacific Avenue and was busted for it. I don't agree with him. He has these kind of halfway, and I regard as half-assed solutions, which involve essentially trying to cater to the city council's essentially First Amendment hostile views on this. Sidewalk chalk should not be a crime, period. It isn't. It's sold on Pacific Avenue at Palace Art Stationery. Certainly political slogans written on Pacific Avenue in chalk are not criminal activity, and for the city to treat it as such is targets those who are doing so, and it shows their willingness to go after their critics. And that was the case 10 years ago, and they repeatedly went after Becky Johnson and others. And it's the case. I think it's still the case. And to say, well, and the idea of having little painted boxes where people can have First Amendment rights, with the implication that the rest of the sidewalk has to be First Amendment free, is to me another fundamental misunderstanding of the rights on public sidewalks, and is a really dangerous and damaging concession to authorities that want to essentially exclude the First Amendment from everywhere but areas where they can control very, very closely and tightly, which is, of course, the opposite of what the First Amendment was supposed to be about. So that was the city council that was. There'll be another city council coming up on Tuesday, the last one of the summer. I'll be talking more about that on Sunday. I just got a call from a caller asking about the something about foreign policy issues. My apologies to that caller. I'm always trying to do several things at once in the radio station. So if she wants to call back and ask a question specifically on the air, I could probably give it more attention. If you want to call in, you can. Call in number here is 427-3772. And, hey, I invite you to do that. But let's now turn to some street interviews, so that at least a few homeless folks who haven't got the initiative, energy, or perhaps they have the intelligence not to show up at these city council meetings, since they realize the deck is so thoroughly stacked that it makes very little purpose, maybe very little point to go to these meetings. There are some in our Huff meeting who really feel that by doing this week after week, month after month, they'll kind of build up a head of steam, and I can understand that. That was my theory when I first came to Santa Cruz. Actually, I've been in Santa Cruz for a while, but when I first began organizing homeless activism in Santa Cruz in the summer and fall of 1988, and we were opposing the sleeping ban, but we came with literally thousands of signatures, which we gathered on Pacific Avenue in spite of police harassment and other problems down there. And the city council not only ignored us, they began arresting us, and that's... So our response was to start sleeping out at city council and escalating the situation so that they're, and we were willing to go to jail. We were willing to take citations. And the result, actually was the creation of, initially they had, I think it was two shelter beds at the River Street mini shelter at that time. Maybe it was four. And they were giving out little cards suggesting people should call the shelter rather than if they're wondering where to sleep. It was completely Well, not only was it ludicrous, it was a form of criminal abuse to those in need, particularly by progressives like Marty Wormhout and John Laird, who I've never forgiven for this kind of behavior, even though Laird gets, you know, great credentials as a gay legislator who came out. And good for him for doing that, by the way. But politicians who ignore the basic human rights of the poorest people in their community deserve nothing but the kind of shame and contempt that I hope those who are ignoring the rights and needs of renters are going to get from folks organizing with the benefit of tenants together. So it's an interesting question about how effective going to city council is. I think it can be an organizing tool, provided you understand the city council is going to ignore you. And you have to find some way to get to the public through this. And it is true, these are televised meetings, so that's something to think about. And there is going to be a protest, an appearance at city council, the last meeting of the year, I should say, of the summer. And that'll be happening on this Tuesday coming up down the road. And people can show up at 4:30 right before the oral communication. I'll be talking more about this on Sunday and also discussing what other items are on the city council agenda. Let's hear some now from some voices on the street, and we'll do that. Outside the Longs, and it's around 6:15 or thereabouts on the 23rd of June. It says, party till you're homeless. Have you been partying?
Yeah, it also says, officer bastards.
All says, a cab, but then if you look at the small print.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to get into this, but I'm asking you anyway. You say, have you been hassled today?
Yeah, we got hassled for sitting next to each other, actually, me and my girlfriend.
Which okay. Looks like a threat. What is your name, madam?
Evie.
And you are...
Link.
And where were you sitting together in this disastrous, dangerous...
On the main street over there, Pacific.
How long have you been in town?
2 days.
And how many times have you been hassled by the police?
Three.
No tickets?
No tickets. Our friend who's in our group, he left today because he has a ticket. He got ticketed for camping down the train tracks.
And were you there when this ticket was given, or did you just hear?
Yes, we were across the way in the bushes. He passed down the middle of the road, and we were hidden in the bushes about 10 feet away from him. So we managed to avoid it, but he got one.
And were you pretty much in a group, or just the two of you?
The three of us at the time. Yeah.
What's your impression of all this?
Of what exactly?
Santa Cruz, how you've been treated, and so forth.
Well, the cops are really mean. They just find any excuse to bother you, or to just make you leave.
What city have you recently come from?
I think I came from San Francisco, and before that, Reno.
Is that where you're from, Reno?
I'm from Miami, Florida.
Did you hitch across the country?
No, I mostly train hopped.
Uh-huh. And how did that go?
It was actually simpler than just hitchhiking.
And were you doing it alone or in company?
With Link.
Your first cross-country train hop?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, you want to...
And how's the panhandling here? Are people giving you what you want or not?
We're not allowed to panhandle together. It has to be separate. It's more of stupid rules than it is anywhere else.
And how has that impacted your ability to get money?
Quite a lot. You can barely get anything. We can't sit anywhere next to a water fountain, a building. It's impossible to do anything here.
Have you seen this in any other cities?
No.
So Santa Cruz is a special town.
Yes, it is.
Cool. Well, anything else you want to add?
No.
Anything else, gentlemen, you want to say about the whole scene here?
I don't know anything.
It used to be a lot cooler 3 years ago when we had 50 hippies chilling on the levee. Now that they've banned it, there's nothing but tweakers and junkies here.
And again, we've been here.
I'm sorry. I've done it before myself, but you gotta at least let me rag on you for it.
No, absolutely not.
Well,
so we have a dispute as to the value of tweaking and junkering.
Yeah.
And
they're good people most of the time.
If you get the right ones, they're really chill.
Me, I'm all brand new. I've never jumped a train before or anything. I just sit around and do drugs all day.
I like to masturbate.
Oh, yeah, all day. Masturbate on a train. Cool.
Masturbation on a train is next book, perhaps.
Possibly.
All right, well, hang in there. And again, we've been talking with...
Nice meeting you, man.
And you are Luke?
Link.
Link.
That part.
Yeah, yeah, thanks, Mike.
Medical.
So we're here at the Red Church at Parish Hall. It's 6:25. We're talking with Paul Verko. Paul, you say you recently have some rather significant injuries?
Yeah, I have a concussion. My hand is smashed in 5 places. I'm now physically disabled, and there's a problem with my knee as well that hasn't even been looked into. I've been denied all services at the shelter, even with doctors' referrals in writing. No room at the inn, forever.
And when did you get refused?
You'll have to talk to the director. Her name's Shelley McKittrick. She also fired me for inappropriate behavior 2 years ago at the shelter, working at the armory. Didn't cash me out properly and really gave me no reason at all.
Now, how long?
Shelley McKittrick.
How long had you been working there?
I've been involved with that shelter for over 10 years.
And is
Shelley McKittrick is the person that is trying to
I got your drift.
That is criminal.
Let me try. So we're talking with.
Now they really don't have any updates.
Sure.
Other than yes, they have brought in some other officers that ain't real ones. I guess they be transferring from one city or county to another, messing with people. It's 6:28. I can't change it. It goes off at 6:28.
I forgive you. So is there a change in how things have looked since the last time you were here?
Yeah.
And what do you see?
Just the attitudes with people's been different. That's all. You know what it means. Everybody can look around and see. Come on, I'm gonna grab my stuff.
And we've been talking with you. You take care, honey. So we have a man who's got a brighter view. What's your name, sir?
Oh.
Aha. Okay.
But things are looking brighter.
Okay.
Hey, so bug spray exposure, River Street, Robert?
Yeah, we had the staff sprayed some bug spray in there. And then one of the residents did his own treatment and had, rural accident or residential accident.
Meaning what?
Spilled some of that stuff through people's mattresses.
Oh, and so you experienced bad effects from it? Or?
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I was laying there for about 10 days, and I'm going, wow, I feel weird. Every time I lay down here, my teeth start hurting.
So are you at the Paul Lee Law Office we're talking about?
No, it's River Street.
Oh, River Street. And are you in River Street yourself right
Owned
now?
Owned by Encompass Housing now.
Encompass, that's the name I can never remember.
Yeah,
who's running the Coral Street open? Who's running the shelter? Who's running the homeless lack of service?
Called Inbel Natir or something of Encompass. I told her about what they did and what happened, and then warned.
Monica Martinez is heading Encompass. I'm just not sure who's running what. Anyway, Robert, good luck. You get a meal.
Yeah, I think she's left her post at HSC or moved on or something.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Thank you, Robert.
Here.
We have a complaint about the food at the Red Church from
Bob Hutchinson, a.k.a. Laughing Dog.
Yes, sir.
Not enough garlic. Otherwise, it's good.
Okay. There you go. Perhaps you should join the kitchen staff.
Everywhere. Okay, I'll try.
All right. Go ahead.
Wipe out the paintings of slogans all over the streets, confusing the people while the asphalt burns them with tired feet.
All right, and we've been listening to the music of
Bob Marley.
Thank you, Bob. Any street reports? Well, Lito, anything new you wish to pass on to your fans?
Just wondering why I've seen a little old lady raging about being tired of living in a police state.
When did you see that?
Today.
And where did you see that?
The park.
And
raging. Raging mad. I would have gave her a machine gun to drive it.
What was your response?
I said, how the hell did they close off the forest? Made me wonder.
All right, I'll let you get to food. Thank you. We have a new analysis of the people in the streets. What's your analysis?
Not people on the streets. The powers that be are unworthy out there.
Tell me more.
No, I don't think so. I'm just appalled at some of the repercussions that some of the non- nonsense I've heard. You know, they closed the they're closing the West Side Recycling Center permanently.
Really?
Permanently.
I know they were talking about regulating
it. They're talking about it. They have sold it, and they are talking about a closing date coming very soon.
And what's your analysis of why this is happening?
Well, there's only one analysis, or there's only my opinion. My humble opinion says it's the money from the West Side that has empowered the people of that side to either get a hold of the landowner or buy the property and raise the rent so high, because that's why they're moving, is because the rent has gone up like $10,000 a month.
Are you yourself a worker with that group, or how do you know all this stuff?
I am a humble recycler, banging garbage cans for a living.
Good luck to you, sir. Do you wish to say you are?
No, I don't.
Fair enough.
I'm a humble nobody.
All right, humble recycler. Thank you, sir.
And this was an issue that we talked about, I think, about a year or two ago, about how the city was going after recyclers, compliments of Pamela Comstock and Lynn Robinson, I think with the backup support from Chirazis, Bryant, and Matthews, and maybe Elaine and Posner. The idea was to keep closer tabs on the two recycling agencies, because the claim was, without any documentation, which the police department actually disputed, they said there wasn't evidence of stolen stuff, but that was part of the mythology of the evil criminal homeless, is that they're stealing a lot of stuff in order to recycle and sell it. And this was presented in some vitriolic language by some of the right-wing bigoted groups that sort of the Take Back Santa Cruz stripe. And there was an agreement. I think there was a finding that the state law kind of prohibited their shutting down the recycling centers. But it looks like if this individual is correct, this humble recycler guy, that they found another way to do it. I don't know. I haven't heard any more about this. Haven't researched any more. If anyone has any more information, please give me a call either on air. You can call for the next 12 minutes at 427-3772. Or you can call me off air on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. The Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Passing video was a fraud. You could have easily found out, but you didn't. Instead, everybody got used to frame the Take Back Santa Cruz as a kinder and gentler organization. According to a city councilman, there was one of the clean team people under that blanket. It's what I've been saying all along. The comments have been taken down all along at Indy Bay. The video was a fraud. Everybody was had. Everybody thinks these people aren't smart enough. They may have not created the situation. I think the guys just did it as homeless bashing porn for shits and giggles. But they're smart. The people we're talking about.
What Razor Ray, also known as Lee, is talking about here is the Ken Collins video. That's a video of the clean team about a year ago, made by Jeremy Leonard. I believe he's come out and acknowledged having made the video, where he went around with the clean team, and this Ken Collins fellow was poking at the homeless person who was lying in his sleeping bag and denouncing him. And Razor Ray's view is that this was a phony incident, supposedly to the benefit of Take Back Santa Cruz. I've never been quite clear as to why he would say this, and when I tried to introduce him to Jeremy Leonard, the actual video journalist, he began denouncing Leonard, and I don't know if he was threatening him. Ray tends to get pretty harsh in his rhetoric. He's threatened me on different occasions, and he talks about stringing people up. Some of it's political rhetoric, some of it's passion of the moment, whatever. But we didn't get a really clear view as to what evidence he has or what his basis is for these concerns, and I just tend to, I wouldn't even, you know, spend any time on Ray at all, except that he does have a lot of articulate and appropriate and, I think, stuff that goes to the heart of issues in terms of the who employs who in Santa Cruz, the nature of the corporate scene here. He's been around for decades, so he's certainly had a lot of experience. But he can be pretty harsh in his criticisms, and He also, it's hard to get into a reasoned dialogue with him, I found. So I don't try. I just record his thoughts and move on. Let's hear some more. This again is from the Red Church, end of June, a couple weeks ago.
Sell expensive pieces of real estate and other merchandise for a living, and they know how to grab on a concept and market it, and they did, and every activist in Santa Cruz did their promotion for them. Oh yeah, and Brent Adams, the guy with the sanctuary camp, he's consorting with the guy that made that bogus video to do a sanctuary camp video too. I found that out the other day, and there's a whole bunch of interesting things going on, and it's all tragically ugly.
And how can people learn more?
By paying attention and using critical analysis. There's two basic rules to journalism. Follow the money and who stands to gain. That second rule is even more important than the first one. If you see someone gaining, you say, huh, funny how that happened. If you can't say funny how that happened, then I guess you're just destined to be a sheeple for the rest of your life. Now I'm going to go eat.
Thank you, Lee. Any street reports?
Thus far, still working on getting off the streets, but still happy to be on the streets with my family.
What's your name?
Ariel.
Thanks and good luck.
Always good to see you.
All right. Three reports, Mark.
I'll group tomorrow at 10 at MHCAN, 10 a.m.
And are there any requirements? Anybody can come?
Anybody come. But usually it's about schizophrenia and voices and issues like that.
Okay.
But schizophrenia support.
So even if you don't have a mental health label, you can still come if you're this hot topic interests you.
We'll probably talk about mostly about that kind of stuff, though.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll probably talk mostly about that kind of stuff, though.
Okay, and this is at 10 a.m. every Tuesday at MHCAN.
All right. There's 209. 209. And we've been door 209. Matt. Matt Davis.
Thank you, Matt.
209 Cayuga Street, I believe, is what happens every, is the place where MHCAN is located. Also, folks at the Huff meeting pointed out that MHCAN also provides breakfasts, and it's not quite clear whether they require credentials of mental illness or doctor's diagnoses or intake, whatever, which I find objectionable, but maybe as required for them to get sustaining money. I think Sarah Leonard is a person who's been working a lot with MHCAN. I've been reading some of her stuff on Steve Plaich's website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, which I really try to avoid because so much of it is taken up with troll chatter, as I like to say. There's a lot of kind of homeless bashing going on and activist bashing as well. And the main issues get lost. But if you want to see J. Craig Canada, a former free radio broadcaster who is quite knowledgeable about medical marijuana, defend and describe the kind of discrimination. Well, he's attacks the kind of discrimination against medical marijuana users that happens. It's on a thread that actually Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz. It also talks about Laura's Law, which is a law that I'm going to be talking about on Sunday on the morning show. I'll be coming back from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon this Sunday. And I'll be playing some tape about Laura's Law. This is the law that was passed some years ago in California, but has never really been implemented. But San Francisco recently implemented it, and it allows for much easier holding of people designated with mental illness labels. And while it's proponents claim it does not mandate forced treatment or forced drugging, it does. One of the criteria for being a part of the for being seized is that you've refused treatment. That would mean refusing medication, probably usually. And while it is true that you will get what's called a Reese hearing before a judge, it's usually an in-hospital court with some kind of representative, but not really a judge. There is a real issue as to whether this is a needles on wheels program that essentially means you're not only going to get drugged when you're inside the psych ward, but they're going to come to your house and tell you if you don't take your medication, you're going to be dragged back into the psych wards. The notion being somehow, it's based on the mythology that somehow all these medications that are making billions for the pharmaceutical industry are a solution to and a cure for, or at least a stabilizing influence around dealing with so-called mental crises and illnesses. But in fact, of course, I've had on the show Robert Whitaker, who's talked a lot about how it's just the opposite, that these do represent a form of social control, and they can deal with symptoms over the short run, but in the end, the long run, it's generally the case that they make matters worse for many people, not necessarily for everyone. You know, no, one size never fits all, really. But that has been what I've picked up from Whitaker's book, Mad in America, and his subsequent book, Anatomy of an Epidemic. Any case, this is a thread on Steve Plaich's Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz about Laura's Law, which also veered off into J. Craig Canada's talking about how hostile to medical marijuana Sarah Leonard's M.H. Can is. And I haven't talked to Sarah Leonard about it, but I do know that when I talked to Sylvia Karras about it years ago, she stonewalled me when I found that medical marijuana people were being refused the opportunity to medicate. And I was I like Sylvia, and she is a great source of information. But people who get into positions of power, even, you know, smaller positions of power, may find themselves under significant attack if they attempt to avoid the real severe questions that come if their organizations are denying people basic rights. And is that happening at MHCAN? I don't know. All I know is that on Tuesday at 10, Matt has told us there is an actual group that meets, and I've also heard that there's a breakfast that are served there. So you might want to check that out up on Cayuga Street. And I believe, actually, Mike, you were going to look into that, but as yet, of course, you've failed to do so. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. I did fail, I have to confess.
But you're a good man, nonetheless.
I've tried to put it back on my agenda.
Put it back on your agenda. Mike is a hardworking guy who's... what are you working at these days, Mike, if anything?
I'm working on my own enlightenment.
Yes, indeed. He's becoming enlightened. And maybe enlightening the community, because you are also a free radio broadcaster and you're working on that.
Yeah, well, you know, if you can light one candle, other candles can have some hope of lighting.
Or light a fire under some asses and some people will start getting their act together, hopefully, or start responding to the community. So, I'm reaching the end of the show. Coming up soon from the Cream of the Dregs is Uncle Dennis. My apologies to those of you who normally listen to free radio on the radio. We have been encountering antenna problems, which we hope will be resolved soon, but we really need, this is a familiar song, I know, a place to put our illegal antenna.